On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the daily mayhem and destruction of Iraq, one number stands out as a break with history. Wounded U.S. soldiers who make it to a trauma center have a 90% survival rate, the highest survival rate of any American war. Now, HBO cameras have gone inside a U.S. military trauma unit in Baghdad. They call it Baghdad ER. The scenes they've brought out are bloody, heroic, heartbreaking, and absolutely shockingly routine. More than 17,000 American troops have been wounded, and many are wounds for life. Survival is a blessing, but it's not pretty. Americans don't see the daily blood, sweat, and tears, but they should. Now many will. Up next on Point, Inside Baghdad ER. Joining me now from New York is filmmaker John Alpert, winner of 12 Emmy Awards and co-founder of New York's Downtown Community Television Center. He's co-director of the new documentary Baghdad ER, which premieres Sunday night on HBO. John Alpert, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Pleasure being here.
Also with us from New York is Emmy Award-winning producer and director Matthew O'Neill, co-director of Baghdad ER. Mr. O'Neill, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having us.
The first thing I want to say right at the beginning here is my hat is so far off to the medical teams that you followed here from the 86th Combat Support Hospital out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Absolutely humbling, kind of overwhelming, the devotion of these teams, men and women, to the wounded in Iraq. It made me feel proud, made me feel sad what you show here, made me feel angry in so many directions are hard to keep track of sometimes. But to that team out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, my hat is off, way off. And really to both of you, I mean, this is, I'm not sure how to describe it except that the reality of it is so deep and moving, and you haven't pitched it with a high political tone one way or the other. It's so human, it kind of speaks for itself. John Alpert, Matthew O'Neill, to both of you, my congratulations on it. Describe for us, if you would, John, exactly when you were there and what you were shooting.
We were there for 2 months, and the 86th Combat Support Hospital is the place where they want to take you if you're severely wounded and they're desperately trying to save your life. They have a system of helicopters that are ready and waiting all over Iraq. And if you're wounded, that helicopter is coming to get you. They're flying 175 miles an hour. They scoop you up, and you can get to that hospital within a half hour. And then the doctors and the nurses spring into action. They try to save your life, and in many cases they do so. I've never been so inspired filming anything in my life.
Matthew O'Neill, the flow of wounded was just overwhelming, just nonstop of it. I mean, it takes a lot of wounded to reach nearly 18,000, where the number stands now for U.S. Troops. And, of course, in the same facility, the other end of the hallway, they're treating Iraqi wounded and in the middle, bad guys, as they say in your film. But the flow must have just been, for them, it's clearly a huge labor and emotional trial. What about for you as a filmmaker?
Well, for us, it hit the point where every time I heard that helicopter and its whirring blades coming into the hospital, my stomach would clench up because I knew what was coming off. I didn't know if it was going to be American soldiers or Iraqi civilians or perhaps even insurgents who the people in the hospital treat as well. But I knew that it was going to be mangled bodies coming off with often horrific injuries.
And it's nonstop, a 90% survival rate in these trauma centers, which everybody points out is the highest survival rate of any American war for those who get to the centers. John, give us a sense of what it takes to achieve that kind of survival rate, which is not to say they don't go away undamaged. They're often deeply damaged, but they survive. What's it take to accomplish that?
Well, I think it takes teamwork. It's a well-oiled machine. It certainly takes speed. They get them off the battlefield and into the hospital very quickly. You know, I had a motorcycle accident. You know, I was over in Iraq for 2 months, and I'm driving up and down Route Irish, the most dangerous road in the world, and I was lucky enough to come back without a scratch and got on my motorcycle and a block away from my house, crashed and broke my foot. Gosh, it took me more than an hour to get to the hospital. If I was in Iraq, I'd be there in 5 minutes.
And it's not just from the battlefront, which of course is everywhere, given the IEDs, the roadside explosives, and all the rest. It's not just from there to this facility inside the Green Zone in Baghdad, but it's there right on out. At one point, you've got
one of the doctors saying, you know, we're going to get you out of here. Iraq is dirty. We'll get you to Germany. They get the soldiers to Germany in a big hurry.
My understanding is that the speed with which they get the soldiers out of Iraq has a lot to do with the 90% survival rate, because you could be injured on a street in Baghdad and 10 hours later you'll be sitting in a world-class hospital in Landstuhl, Germany, where the Army has its premier European medical center.
But the fact is, so many saved, and yet death hovers all around these scenes, and soldiers die. The wounds here are just horrific many times. We're going to bring in some sound from Baghdad ER, the film premiering Sunday night here. And be advised, this is a disturbing scene. So if this is a scene where it doesn't work. An unidentified soldier, at least in the film, arrives at the 86th Combat Support Hospital in Baghdad, severely wounded. Let's listen.
Full CPR. Check for a pulse, please.
Guys, we got a huge hole in his backside here. I can put my whole hand in it.
Out in the field, he was 10 minutes down. They did CPR for that 10 minutes. Brought him here. He wasn't bleeding out of his leg.
I know I'm in. I'm not getting any blood back. I think he's exsanguinated.
Check for a pulse. Check three leads on the monitor.
Nothing or nothing.
Okay. I think we should call it. Anybody else have any suggestions?
No, sir.
Okay, it's called right now. It is 11:56.
Good try, guys.
We should call it. The language of one they couldn't save there in Baghdad. The blanket goes over the head, and it sounds workaday, but it's not. You bring the emotions of these medical teams very much to the fore here, and they're powerful. But many more saved. Matthew O'Neill, give us a sense of the range of injuries that they're confronted with in these wounded coming in.
Well, most of the injuries that come into the cache are due to IEDs, improvised explosive devices, and that's what we saw every day. And I remember that scene you just played vividly when we were filming it, because the speed with which all the doctors desperately worked to save this young soldier's life was incredible. And, you know, they mourn every soldier they lose completely. And I'll never forget that moment, because one of the things that they had to do was gather up that soldier's personal effects, yeah, including his wedding ring and his pictures that he carried in his wallet. And one of the medics told me that that was the most difficult part of her job, was putting the ring and the pictures into a plastic bag and knowing that the next time this plastic bag was opened up, it was going to be by a grieving family who lost their American soldier.
You've got one of the doctors saying it's just sad every day, a never-ending stream of this crap, let's say. And his anger at the IEDs, his anger at the flow of wounded, kind of overwhelming. I have to say, John Alpert, one thing that struck me was when these soldiers come in, I mean, very often they're twisted, they're in real trouble, but if they're conscious and able, they're remarkably cool and collected. They must have been prepped that this might come one day, how to respond. I mean, they're talking, they're interacting with the doctors, they're describing these wounds that are unbelievable, even as they suffer them.
You know, there was one soldier who's lying in bed, his leg is badly mangled. He looks up at the doctor and says, "Hey, you got beer?" You can't drink when you're in Iraq. None of the soldiers have access to alcohol. He was kind of hoping he might get lucky that day after getting blown up. Mm. They have a sense of humor. The doctors have a sense of humor, and we're all familiar with MASH. Well, this is the modern-day MASH. It just happens to be called CASH, Combat Support Hospital. And a lot of the themes that really attracted us as viewers to MASH, the cost of the war, but also the honor of the people that are involved in it, play out every single day in the combat support hospital in Baghdad.
You've got a soldier remarkably collected lying there saying, you know, it's an IED. If God had wanted me, he would have called me, but I'm still here. I just hope my twig and berries still work for the wife. I mean, that sense of humor is there. And the cell phones are handed out, and they call home right there from the MASH or CASH unit. Let's listen here to Sergeant Jeffrey Beltran calling home.
You can call home on this. Okay. You just have to dial like regular home phone, you know, one and then the number. So you can go ahead and dial.
Hey, honey. How you doing? I'm doing, you know, fine, but guess what? I got hit with IED. Well, I was gunning. And you know, all it did was, you know, I was on top of the vehicle, like where Davis is at. And all I heard was the explosion. It happened so fast.
It happened so fast, and it happens again and again. You report that he's now in physical therapy after 9 surgeries. So the treatment, Matthew O'Neill, goes on and on after the first rush of treatment that you're portraying here.
You know, these soldiers come back and they go to places like Walter Reed or the Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas, and their treatment is ongoing. And what's interesting about Sergeant Beltran there, and he's very open about it, we just saw him on Monday night at the Washington, D.C. premiere, and he said he loved the film, but he also said that he's done most of his physical recovery. He's out of physical therapy now, but he's still doing his mental push-ups to try to get himself back in shape, to be able to, you know, deal with every day and get himself back.
Brian's calling from Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I myself was a patient in the combat support hospital in Baghdad for a rather minor surgery, but I had the opportunity to witness many others coming in who were severely wounded soldiers, men, of course, in my case. And I must say, I was just amazed. To a person, despite major wounds, every one of them wanted to get right back to the front lines. But I would just like to say thank you for the dedication of the medical persons at this support hospital, the chaplain.
Amen to that.
Yes, I think it's very, very helpful for the American people to know more about the terrible things occurring in Iraq. It's not close enough to home for many of us, except for those who were injured and carry this with them. So thank you very much. I look forward to viewing this screening, and again, thanks to the medical personnel and the other support personnel who helped me and so many others in Baghdad and Iraq.
Brian, we hear it, and we thank you for calling in with that. And the part of that thanks that goes to these filmmakers for bringing back a very even-handed kind of steady gaze at the price being paid. I want to turn now to a combat medic who has served in Ramadi in Iraq, 12 months there. He asked us not to share his name because he's still active duty. He's speaking to us without the permission of the Army. The Army did not provide medical staff for us to speak with today. But he's calling in right now. Medic, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me.
A lot of Americans on Sunday night are going to see firsthand what it's like to deal with all the wounded out of Iraq, the heroic effort that goes into that. You were at it for 12 months. What do you come away with as a memory and impression? How do you get over the kind of scenes we saw here? You were out picking these men and sometimes women up at the battlefront.
Yes, I was, and it's not necessarily something that you get over. It's after living that for 12 months, it's not something that you just necessarily move on from. It's just something you have to learn how to take away everything you can and learn as much as possible from it. You use it as an experience for strength later on in life, I guess, to see what those men and women go through.
You were a first responder right out there whenever there were American or Iraqi casualties. Give us a sense of the volume of casualties that you were confronted with. How often, how much?
Well, you know, it was never consistent. It always just had to do with what was going on in country at the time. Some days we had up to 40 to 50 casualties at one time. Some days we would go 2 or 3 days without any casualties. So it never stayed very consistent, and that was what added to a lot of the stress of it, because you never knew what you were going to expect one day to the next.
You were taking American soldiers back for treatment. You were taking Iraqis back as well, often in really chaotic scenes where emotions were running quite high. I understand it was sometimes hard to deal with the crowds of Iraqis wondering where you were taking the wounded.
Yeah, the crowd control could be a little bit of a problem sometimes because of communication barriers. We would have a hard time letting them know where we were taking their family members, and we would bring them to our field hospitals for treatment and care. But in a lot of cases, they thought we were taking them prisoners. So that did cause a little bit of stress on everybody's part, but we usually handled it pretty well through the aid of our interpreters.
What do you think about this film? I don't know if you've seen it yet, but do you think Americans should see this kind of scene, or do you think it's invasive? How do you look at it?
Most definitely, I think everybody in America should see this so that they can get a honest picture of what's going on and what is happening to our soldiers. It's a very difficult film for people to watch, I understand, and especially for those of us who have been there and don't want to relive those experiences. But difficult as it may be, it's the truth, and it's very important for people to see what that truth really is.
Medic, we're very grateful to you for your service in Iraq, and we thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's listen to a bit of Baghdad ER. Here's Private Chester Keenum of Pinson, Alabama. He arrives at the 86th Combat Support Hospital with a bandage over an eye. He's a member of the 2nd Platoon, Company A, 167th Infantry Battalion.
All right, we're going to get a CAT scan of your face and head, okay?
All right. We've only been in country, what, 2 weeks, week and a half? We've been about 3 weeks in country.
So the idea is to get you surgery, get you through the surgery, and then get you home. Okay?
Home.
We're going to get you, well, you're going back to the hospital, back to Walter Reed, not home, but back to the States. That's where they do the surgery.
All right.
Okay?
I'm here to do my job.
And we see that a lot around here. These guys really want to take care of their fellow soldiers and take care of the troops. And it's very hard for them to leave them right in the middle of the mission sometimes.
I'm an infantry soldier, so I'm going to live my life like an infantry soldier. I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out like an infantry soldier.
And there you hear Private Chester Keenum of Pinson, Alabama. John Alpert, Matthew O'Neill, we heard again and again from these men. First of all, they're often severely wounded, and they're all asking about their comrades. It's clearly the first thing on their mind, even ahead of their own wounds. And then not to get out of there, but to get back there, to stay at it.
I called Chester's home a couple of months ago to give him an update about how the film was going, and I got his wife on the line. Mm. And she told me that he had regained 20/20 vision, which no one thought was possible.
He had a big piece of metal behind his eye. He was blind in the eye at the time of your filming.
And so I said, oh, that's fantastic. I mean, that's a medical miracle. That's great. And the phone was silent. I said, hello? She said, well, you know, he's in Kuwait now.
Yeah.
Because he's back, and he went back. And these guys are all choosing to go back if they can find a way to do it. And it's because of the bonds that they have, I think, as brothers, the shared experience that they've gone through. You know, they want to go back because of their commitment to their fellow soldiers.
Yeah, and in many cases, that seemed to be the primary reason that was stated over and over again. In some cases, it wasn't really clear whether they supported the war, whether they didn't support the war. We found soldiers who didn't support the war but would go back in a second because they wanted to be with their fellow soldiers. You know, the previous HBO documentary, the previous HBO show about war, Band of Brothers, really talked about this type of bond that soldiers build up. And it was interesting. We developed that also. As difficult as it was to be in some of these places, when we had to leave a unit, I began to miss them. And as I was driving away, I thought, this is a really strange feeling. This place it's scary. It's almost like being in hell. And I want to turn the Humvee around and go back and be with these guys.
I want to listen to a little bit of another trooper, Sergeant William Winburn, for a sense of the emotion. I mean, they are stoic, but they also, they're human. And you hear the emotion here. Sergeant Winburn's hand was just mangled in an explosion, and he's talking with field medic William Bertram, who brought him to the 86th Support Hospital there, about the driver who was killed in the accident. You can hear the emotion.
I appreciate everything you did for me out there. I tried my damnedest. You did a hell of a job, Doc. Well, keep your head up, brother. I know it's gonna be tough.
I know.
Neither one of us could do it. No. I loved him just like everybody else.
I know.
It breaks your heart to see it. And the motives for being there, not always quite as clear as the camaraderie once the soldiers are there. Here's another clip of Sergeant Winburn. He's headed out of Iraq, talking about he's just lost a thumb and a chunk of his hand. He'll get an artificial thumb eventually, we learn. But he's headed out of Iraq and thinking, what brought him?
His main problem right now is he was in a big traumatic event today. Probably his best buddy died. He was driving the car, and he got out of it with losing a thumb. So all things considered,
like I said, I've been talking to people and stuff, just been doing a lot of soul searching. You know, and like I said, I know there's probably nothing I could have done to change what happened, but it's just a be something that's gonna take time to heal, just like my hand.
All this just try to get my family a house. That's why I volunteered to do this, to pay off my bills, where I could build us a house.
Sergeant William Winburn, one of the almost 18,000 now wounded in Iraq. David is calling from Tripoli, Iowa. Hi, David, you're on the air.
2 points. The first one, a story about all the casualties and the results of the horror of war is very important to get to the country, because then we're dealing with the costs of human costs of the war that has not been shown very much, and we're not really aware of it. And when people get a close-up view of the costs in human terms, the attitude will change. They'll begin to appreciate these young people.
David, have you been there? Have you seen this firsthand?
Yes. I'm a retired chaplain, and I worked for a year at Wilford Hall Medical Center in San Antonio. It's a level 4 trauma center.
This is Air Force chaplain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you saw all sorts of casualties coming in daily. My time there was during the Panama time. But because it's a trauma center in southwest San Antonio, you have a lot of the wrecks, the drive-by shootings, the gang war stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctors get real combat experience.
And you counseled these wounded, no doubt. What about the long-term effects?
In the early 90s, there was nothing. Nothing we could do in terms of PTSD and understanding it.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And so it was through the 90s when that information became more understandable. There became a physician or a psychologist who could help you with it. My own personal experience, I had to bury a lot of stuff from that war, from Desert Storm, when I was in that working in that hospital, until my last trip to the Middle East, when all things came kind of unglued for me, and it took a lot of PTSD care by two particular psychologists, and both of them were private pay.
Even for you as a chaplain?
As a chaplain, yes. The military is just now getting around to having good qualified people to handle the kind of the mental costs of war.
David, we appreciate your testimony to that and your call today. Let me put it to John Alpert. John, what about those who are watching this day after day? David was in that capacity as an Air Force chaplain. You had doctors and chaplains right there. There's one, just a little bit of sound. These doctors want to communicate through you clearly, and one of them says over his shoulder, as if to the American people, a lot of young kids over here getting hurt, as if that's something that people aren't really having their heads around. How do the medical staff deal with the volume of this trauma?
It's almost incomprehensible. Just speaking about the chaplain at the 86 Combat Support Hospital, David Snyder, is a real hero. Anytime a soldier was seriously wounded or in danger of dying, he was there. He was at the bedside. He unfortunately had to pray over them after they died. He said, "There are so many soldiers have died. I can't count them right now, because if I stopped to count them, it would paralyze me and I wouldn't be able to do my job." Mm. But he called us 2 weeks ago, and it's really nice to hear the voices of these guys again. You know, how are you doing, Chaplain Snyder? He says, I just wanted to tell you one thing that you had asked me about that I couldn't tell you there. The number is 117, and it was 117 young men and women who died, and I had to bless them.
Wow.
You can't imagine how hard that is. And he was there basically 24 hours a day, because the mangled bodies and the corpses never stopped coming in.
And that's the chaplain. The doctors are working on it as well. You've got You show us Cigar Night. Here they are in one of the safest places, I guess, in this part of Iraq, deep in the green zone. They sit up on the roof, and you've got a half dozen doctors and medical staff sharing cigars. Even there, in that deeply guarded place, they have to kind of sit behind an outcropping of the building so that snipers can't get at them, and they're looking out across Baghdad. Just you happen to be there, and there are explosions and smoke and fire all around the city, and they know that that means incoming casualties that they and their colleagues will be working on. Matthew O'Neill, that must be an incredible scene. It's just happening all around them.
Well, they said in that scene, you know, they don't usually see the actual war. They just see the consequences of the actions that are happening outside of the green zone. And when they hear that bomb off in the distance, when they see smoke rising on the horizon, they know that they're about to hear the blades of the chopper coming back to the combat support hospital, and there's about to be more bodies coming off of the helicopters.
Mm. You quoted Dr. Singh, "I have to believe this country will be a better place for it. Otherwise, this is just sheer madness." Here's an Army nurse talking about what she sees day after day in the ER room in Baghdad.
It's the same kind of casualties, the same kind of severity of injuries, and it just doesn't appear to be changing all that much, which is a little discouraging.
John Halpert, how has the Pentagon responded? We understand they didn't show up in great numbers, the men in uniform, officers, for your Washington screening this week.
Well, the people in uniform have been universally supportive of this film, proud to be part of it, and have said over and over again that they want everybody to see this. Actually, last night, we were supposed to be in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, sitting at the main table with the Surgeon General of the United States to be honored by the 86 cache for making this film. Mm-hmm. Very clearly, everyone in uniform, the people who put their lives on the line, the people who are there saving lives, like this film and very much want America to see this. You know, the Army knows that we're sort of non-blinking, really serious reporters. We don't do puff pieces. They know HBO's reputation, and they gave us full access to this facility. They didn't have to. They want America to see this.
One of the most moving segments of a film that I have to say put the lump very high in my throat more than once, and this is just a kind of devastating moment at the end of the film when Lance Corporal U.S. Marine Robert Minninger struggles for his life, and the team struggles to pull him through. They give it everything, and in the end, he does not make it. His mother has seen the film, and she joins us now from LaGrangeville, New York. Paula Zwillinger, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for the loss to you and your family, Mrs. Zwillinger.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But yet you've seen this film, and you must have known going in, they must have forewarned you that you were essentially going to see your son's last moments. Was it welcome? Was it horror? How do you feel about having it on film?
Well, I think what I first have to explain is when I got notified that there was a documentary being made, it was a gift to me, because this is 5 months after the fact that we lost Bob. So this literally was able to help me find peace, find questions, find answers to the questions that I had, because in essence we had 17 hours of a black hole where we knew nothing that transpired. And this puts a couple answers to those questions that you always have.
Right. He'd been hit with an explosion during combat in Fallujah. When we see him in the film, he's now in the Baghdad ER, in the combat treatment unit here, and It had to be, at some level, comforting to you to see how much effort was poured into trying to save him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that I have to make clear to everybody is what you see in the film is really the focus of the medical care given to our soldiers, including
mm-hmm.
Bob.
Mm-hmm.
What I will hold private is the specifics and, the final moments and things of that nature. So, really, the public will not see that. Okay, the public sees everybody working around him. But, you know, there were some things that I'm willing to share with the world,
right,
which would be the care that he got, the compassion that he got, and, you know, things of that nature, and telling everybody that he wasn't alone. What I'm willing to keep private is mine, and that's the specifics of everything.
I understand. And your end of it, he was 21 years old.
Correct.
out of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, part of the 3rd Battalion, 8th Marine Regiment, and you saw the Marines standing with him there as well, with him right to the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, to me, meant so much, because if I couldn't be there, I'm just glad somebody was there with him.
Do you want Americans to see this? Do you think it's important?
I do. I mean, from a personal perspective, I mean, I found peace with it. From America's standpoint, it's reality. This is war. This is what our troops are faced with every day. So there's a heroism and a bravery that people don't really understand. When you see the compassion and the tears in these soldiers' eyes because they're told, oh, well, you know, you need to come back to the States or go elsewhere for further medical care. You can't return to the front line. They're disappointed. They really want to go out there and be with their buddies, you know, and go back and fight front line. And there's a heroism and bravery that nobody truly understands. There's the bravery of the nurses and doctors that are out there on an everyday basis dealing with these casualties that come in. Mm. That's never addressed. And these people, you know, when they're done their deployment, they're going to come back, and yes, you know, they're going to have some type of post-traumatic stress disorder among themselves, a little bit different than what the soldiers are dealing with on an everyday basis. Mm. But they're going to have it also.
And these soldiers, so young and so earnest.
This is a different caliber of soldier that's out there. And that's what the public also has to understand. These are kids that are, whether it be that they had a draw from 9/11 to go serve their country, whether they just want to make better for their lives, these are college kids. These are just not, you know, some of them, yes, are coming out of high school and being trained and things of that nature. A lot of them have given up college.
And you have given up a son to this war. Paula Zwillinger, we're grateful to you for sharing your thoughts with us. And again, we're sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us. Paula Zwillinger, her son, Lance Corporal U.S. Marine Robert Miniger, died last June in the 86th Combat Support Hospital in Baghdad. We will hear a bit more of that. Glenn is calling from Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Glenna, you're on the air.
Hey. Hi, Matt. Hi, John. I just wanted to thank you guys for what a spectacular job you did. I saw the film in preview here on Fort Gordon.
What did the soldiers think about it, Glenna? We're really curious. Glenna is a nurse in the operating room, and we haven't spoken to her since we've come back from Iraq. It's really great to hear your voice.
Really great to hear your voice,
and
Glenna.
And I took care of Paula's son. And I want to say that that is the first time I was in Iraq for almost 8 months when I cared for him in the OR, and that was the first time that I cried in my experience. And so my point is that I want the public to know that the medical providers that are over there are 100% a volunteer force. And so it's not about post-traumatic stress disorder. It's about, you know, you train to take care of people in general, and these are the people that are in greatest need. And it was Dr. Kelly Blair that you guys are talking about, you know, the kids that are getting hurt, you know, little 21-year-old. And I don't think that even as good a job as you guys did presenting it, that the public is going to be as awestruck as they need to be about the quality of the physicians who leave, you know, the money and the prestige of practice to join the Army to go over there and do it because of their patriotism and because it's the highest level of challenge that they can have as providers.
Glenna, I have to say, watching this, I was deeply struck by that. And appreciate your service there. We're trying to bring home what that reality is here, and of course the film tries that too. If you were there, but I wish you'd stick with us for a moment here. The final moments of the film are also the final moments of the life of Lance Corporal Miniger, whose mother we talked with a moment ago. Heroic efforts by the crew there to keep him alive. He died from wounds received in an explosion in combat in Fallujah. And they're just working and working and working, and they will not give up. And then it begins to appear that this just isn't going to work. Here, essentially, is the last minute of that life. You'll hear Chaplain David Snyder saying a prayer.
All right, why don't we shut off the vent and shut off his monitor as well, okay? I mean, I'm getting, you know, essentially no, but I'll have one right this second. I mean, I was hoping he was going to make it.
Was he chaplain?
He is no religious preference, sir.
I see. I'll pray with you.
Yeah. Sure, okay, sir.
All right. Yeah, that's right.
Heavenly Father, gracious God, we did everything we could to save his life. The EMT worked very hard, and the surgeons, and Lord, we did everything we could. But Lord, we pray that his life and his death would hasten the cause of peace. This senseless war, this violence here would end, and he would be one of the last. But Lord, again, we pray for your comfort and your peace on his family and his friends. And we say thank you for his life. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.
The chaplain saying goodbye in Baghdad ER to Lance Corporal, U.S. Marine Robert Minninger. John Matthew Glenna, you were there, and in the moments before this, you've got one of the staff, and forgive me, I'm not sure who, maybe it's the chaplain down close whispering in this Marine's ear.
That's Chaplain Snyder.
Chaplain Snyder saying, you know, they don't know what he can hear and what he can't. He made a heroic struggle to stay alive. He's whispering, we don't want you to go, we want you to fight, but if you can't, it's okay to go. We're with you. I mean, it's just devastating to see that, Glenna, and you saw it again and again.
It's true, and it just makes you proud for the opportunity to be there. I mean, I came home and people said, oh, my God, how was it? And my response is it was a fabulous experience as a human being because you got to make a difference. It wasn't all about the negative side of it. And, you know, the Marine ethos is they're there because they want to be. It's the most important thing to them. And so you have to accept that. You just have to accept that they want to be there and they're doing what they want to do and what they believe in.
May I ask you about one thing, Glenna? You were an OR nurse there. You heard the chaplain in his prayer.
Yes, sir.
For Lance Corporal Minninger. He said, this senseless war, I have a feeling that's part of the reason that word, that the Pentagon is not quite as enthusiastic as it once was about this film. What do you make of that characterization, that word?
Perhaps two steps forward, one step back. You know, the collateral damage, the civil war that's evolving, perhaps. I think you would have to ask him. I mean, he is a very patriotic and devoted soldier. And I don't care how much you've seen it, it's very difficult to see someone die. And that particular soldier was incredibly fit and very lovely. And, you know, particularly being a Marine, it's just impossible to watch somebody that young die, especially when we had so many opportunities to think that maybe he was going to survive. There was about 13 hours from the time he got to us until he actually passed away. And so, you know, I think the devastation was particularly great in that case. And so I don't think it was a political statement on Major Snyder's part. You know, you're a patriotic American and you're there doing what you need to do. And it's hard to justify the loss of anyone.
Glenna, we're grateful to you for calling in. John Matthew, I know you haven't seen Glenna since you were in that room. I don't want to cut you off from greetings here.
No, but Glenna was one of the heroes. She was there every day, every night, working hard. You know, sometimes on that operating room floor, it was just a wash in blood, and she was there selflessly working, trying to keep these young people alive. You know, I've had a lot of dealings with the Pentagon both before this film was made and negotiating with them and then afterwards. And I can really say that the Pentagon, the soldiers, want people to see the reality of what's happening in Iraq. And they enabled us to go there. They gave us total access. They clothed us. They fed us. They protected us. And they let us see everything. And they never stopped us one second. And can you say the war is anything but senseless in terms of the violence and the cost that it takes on everybody that's involved? I think that that's an accurate statement. And I think that the soldiers want American people to clearly see what's happening over there because they are our servants and they feel that way. But they want the people that they are serving to be informed about the reality that's happening there and to make intelligent decisions and to give them intelligent instructions. Mm-hmm. When we know what's happening mm-hmm. in Iraq, when the public is informed, we're a strong, brave, and undefeatable country. But if we don't know the reality, that makes an unhealthy democracy. And I think the Pentagon and the soldiers want us to see the reality. And you can't have heroes without the horror that they face every single day. That's what makes people like Glenn a hero, because she went in there in the most unimaginable situation and did everything she could to perform her job to the best of her ability.
And I have to say, you cannot come away from this footage without requiring yourself to do a deep gut check on whether this is right, whether this does, at some sense, make sense. Because if it doesn't, to ask this sacrifice, it would just be so profoundly wrong. Glenna, thank you very much for calling in from Augusta.
You're welcome. I don't prefer to comment on the political side of it. My thought is, if America's young are going to be there, they deserve the best possible care. And
we see that.
That was my agenda,
yep.
Period. And the world is never a better place when a young American dies, and it never will be, whether the cause is right or not. So thank you guys very much for what you did. I don't think America gets to see in harm's way that you put yourself to make this film. So I'll sign off, and thank you very much.
Glenna,
thanks, Glenna.
Thank you for calling in. Did you go out with the medevac units? I mean, I saw the big crew there with the Black Hawk going out. I know what that's like. My niece's husband was in Afghanistan on a Black Hawk crew. The footage you brought back, was that from where the bombs had gone off, John, Matthew?
Yes, I spent 2 weeks with the medevac unit. I also spent about a week riding up and down Route Irish with medics. I had to get out of that hospital. And everybody said, oh, it's so dangerous riding up and down Route Irish. It felt such it was such a relief, because when you're riding around there, you're not going to get hit every single day. You're with soldiers. You're in the fresh air. And the thing that's so difficult about the hospital is that it is absolutely unrelenting and unceasing, and that you know every single day that the helicopters are coming in and the bodies are coming in. And I really don't know how people like Glenna lasted a whole year, because after 2 weeks, I said, listen, give me the streets. You know, I'll take my chances with the IEDs. Mm. I felt safer that way than with the trauma of what was coming in on those helicopters.
And you had doctors who were there on their third deployment.
I have, you know, the thing that drives them is this absolute pride that they have in their service and in the job that they're doing. From the moment they wake up to the moment they take off their bloody gowns, they're trying to save lives, and they do it. It's something that I will always be proud of being associated with them. And I'm also proud that the Army gave us the opportunity to do this. You know, as reporters, it's really our job to try and bring back things that people otherwise can't see. And in the same way that I know Glenn is proud of her service, I'm really proud that we got the opportunity to go to the 86 cache and to bring back some of these pictures for the American people.
Well, we cannot help but be grateful to those medical teams. Out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, based there, the 86th Combat Support Hospital, an incredible show of devotion that you've captured in this film. We're grateful to both of you as well for bringing it back to share. John Alpert and Matthew O'Neill, makers of Baghdad ER. It will show on HBO Sunday night. If you can, see it. It should almost be required viewing for a country that sponsors this war. John and Matthew, thank you very much for being with us today.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation, download the On Point podcast, and subscribe to our daily newsletter, all at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.